This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Justin Ozer, and join with me in Free Cloud today are my co-hosts, Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi and Brandon Shamatala. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, Hafe, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Yes, I'm so happy to be with my good friends, Justin and Christy.
We may talk about it later, but that name reminded me of something.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Chrissy, how are you doing?
I am doing well. This was quite an episode, just the start of it, and we'll get to that in a bit.
But yeah.
It was a good episode.
We'll talk about that. So
I'm eager to talk.
Sorry, I'm just give me a second. I'm just finishing downloading Bejeweled.
All right. Give you a few minutes. Are you getting any ads popping up in front of you?
Oh my goodness, it's crazy. These video games nowadays with the ads, it's just brutal. It's fun that you get to play with them, though. Like, you get to play with these ads.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right, well, let's head into talking about episode 5 of Picard, Stardust City Rag. So we're going to start here with our favorite moments. So, Chrissy, favorite moment?
All of the little fan service bits in the the hologram ads and in the when you go into the sequence in the city. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we saw Mr. Mott's hair emporium. Mm-hmm.
Wait, you're stealing from my long list of canon connections for later.
Sorry. It's but no, there was some cool stuff. Favorite and yeah. Yeah. And then the second watch I did, I noticed that there was a Quark's Bar.
Yep. Quark's Bar has a location in Free Cloud, apparently.
Mm-hmm. That was the word I was looking for.
Now, does he have a franchise or has he left Deep Space Nine?
It's a good question. What has happened to Deep Space Nine in the last, 24 years?
Yeah, I mean, we know what happens in the books, which we won't spoil here, right? Yeah. So, but
yeah. But I love when they drop in things like that, and it's like, ooh, wouldn't it be cool if Quark showed up? We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was very cool. So it seems like whenever they have a Skyline, they insert like little Easter eggs, which is cool.
That's nice.
So favorite moment, Brandon?
I kind of got two. So like, I'll talk about my favorite section of the episode later, but I had two little moments that I really liked. And the first one was when Rios and Raffi were talking about Picard and Seven. I just really liked that scene and the way they were talking and the way that it was written where, Raffi was giving a little bit of information and then he was adding it to his line and whatnot. I thought it was a really good moment for the two characters, together. So that's probably my favorite moment in the episode. But then also Picard and Seven talking about their humanity after leaving the Borg was really, really touching. And it was a really great scene. And honestly, like, I've been holding back on saying this because, Patrick Stewart's older, right? He's 79 years old. He's quite a bit older than the last time he's been on screen. And the way that he's delivering his lines, it doesn't quite feel like the way Picard was delivering his lines back in the day, right? And in this scene, I really, really felt like he captured Picard again in this scene. And the first line was when Seven was asking for the rifles, and he's like, she's like, can I take these? And he pauses and he says, of course. And it was just his vocal tone was really, really spot on in that episode, in that section of the episode. And so I wanted to call that one out. It's not that I'm not enjoying him being Picard again. It was this moment where I really felt like Picard was back as Patrick Stewart mm-hmm. acting.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I think, like, in different scenes, he may be playing it differently, and there are parts where, like, oh, that's the Picard of old, and parts where it's like, this is the Picard that's had this experience for 20 years and changed a little bit. But, like, my favorite moment was exactly the one that you highlighted, which is where they're talking about their humanity. And I was going to do it later, but I might as well now. But, like, I love just, like, the sequence of lines, because Seven asks, after they brought you back from your time in the Collective, do you honestly feel you've regained your humanity? And Picard pretty immediately says yes. Mm-hmm. And then she says all of it. And then Picard just pauses and kind of whispers no.
He sounded like First Contact Picard there.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Ah. No, but we're working on it, aren't we? And Seven says, every day of my damn life. I mean, it's like, you know, like the opportunity to see these two characters who have been through this, you know, horrific experience of assimilation and then coming out of it and kind of connecting on that level and relating that, yeah, maybe you can't always get your humanity back. Maybe there's always something from that experience that still scars you and affects you. Mm-hmm. It was just really like touching to see and to see them connect. I mean, just wow. So that was definitely my favorite as well. Yeah.
I'm so glad that you had that one too, Bajustin. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Babiche.
Babiche.
All right. So we've talked about favorite moments. Should we get into episode specific topics here?
Yes, absolutely.
Sure. All right. So let's talk about the opening scene, which I think
I just want to interrupt you there, Justin, for a second. Before we get into the opening teaser, I know we got a lot to talk about here, but I want to talk about my favorite part of this episode on a whole. Right. And I think it was the best part of the story in this episode. And it was the Soji and Narek plot line in this episode.
I thought you might say something like that. This is the first time we haven't seen them.
Wasn't that wonderful? They weren't in this episode.
It was a thing that exists.
Like I said last time, I was getting more into it, but I was okay that it wasn't there because it seems like we'll be intersecting with them soon anyway. But
I wanted to get that out of the way because there's not much to say there. So.
For sure. Okay, so let's get into some specific topics about the episode. So we start out, we're told 13 years earlier, which would be 2386, and we are taken to a place that's called Planet Vergessen, which someone pointed out in German means to forget, which is pretty interesting. And it's in the Hypatia system, the Seven Domes, whatever some of that means. So this scene was extremely intense because basically you see it's revealed that it's Icheb. He's in a Starfleet uniform. And I mean, you find out later he's a lieutenant, science officer, was pulled into this terrible ambush. And someone is disturbingly, like, cheerily, like, trying to take out his Borg parts. There was a nice little connection to canon in that they can't find a cortical node because he donated it to Seven and the episode Imperfection and Voyager. But anyway, it's just, like, whew, pretty intense, pretty grisly, and Seven comes in and can't save Icheb and has to give him a mercy killing. So,
question.
Very intense way to start. Go ahead.
Gorier or less gory than Logan?
Than. Oh. You know, like, because I know when we talked about Logan, I was like, oh, it's hard to take. It's sick to my stomach. I think less so only because in Logan, it felt like it was a lot like. There were a lot more scenes like that, and it just like kept going, and I was just like, ugh. But it was pretty gory. I mean, it's, I mean, I know that in Conspiracy in TNG season one, we did see somebody's head explode, but there was something about this that felt a lot more like realistic and visceral. And honestly, you know, when I watched this first, it was like 5:30 in the morning, and I was like, oh my, I'm not even awake yet.
Don't need that coffee anymore. I'm awake.
So yeah, this was a really interesting way. And again, I think this continues a tradition in all of the episodes so far that starts with a flashback, which I like. But let's get your thoughts on this scene. So Brandon?
So I watched these first, and we watched it with Aubrey tonight, and I made her cover her eyes for this one here.
Yeah.
Right. So, so I kind of told her what was going on. Like ahead of time I told her, I said, look, you're going to need to cover your eyes for this one here.
Yeah.
And
I was kind of covering my eyes too.
So, yeah. Like, I mean, this kind of violence, it doesn't bother me and stuff, but I'm going to bring it up here. you know, when we talked about the swearing a couple of episodes ago, there was a lot of people that are like, oh, you people are a bunch of prudes, not to me, but like on social media, because you're all about the F-bomb and swearing and whatnot. But what about the violence? And I'm like, yeah, what about the violence? You know, I don't particularly want the violence either. I watch Hannibal. Okay. It's about a guy that eats people. Okay. Yeah. And that show was not. It didn't pull its punches on that show, okay? Mm-hmm. There's a time and a place for that kind of stuff. I would rather not see this stuff in Star Trek. It doesn't have to be there in everything. I understand, well, it's for mature audiences. Well, it doesn't have to be for mature audiences. It doesn't have to, you know? And I'm not going to – this isn't something that I'm going to harp on every time again. I'm bringing it up now because this is the most violent scene we've seen so far. Yes, we had a decapitation last week, but even that is different. Okay, because like this one was focusing on it. There was a screaming pain. It was focusing on how much it was hurting Icheb. So it was a different tone than what happened last week with the decapitation. The decapitation was sudden. It was surprising. And it wasn't really bloody. They didn't focus on his the lack of a head. They didn't focus on a stump of a neck or something like that. They just had a thin blood line. And it was done differently. Okay, so I think that there's a difference between them. Maybe I'm deluded, I don't know, but I feel that there's a big difference. So I really wish this wouldn't have been in there, but I mean, it's there and there's nothing that I can do about it. This is how they're taking Star Trek now with the violence and with the language. Mm-hmm. And that's it, yeah.
But let me ask this, Brendan, like given that it's a certain level of violence you'd rather not see, so what do you think about like the story that's going on, like Icheb's being harvested for his Borg parts, basically, and Seven is coming by to try to save him, and she's too late. Like, what do you think about starting the episode with that, or what it contributes?
So, the first thing that I thought of, and I tweeted out pretty quickly on this, is about this trope that's in fiction called fridging. And for those that don't know what this trope is, generally, it's been labeled as a trope where generally your hero, who's generally a male, has their significant love interest killed in order to advance action in the plot and give them motivation for their next step in their action. And while it's usually a love interest, I felt like this was the case here, and I found it interesting that they chose to do this, because as far as I know, this is a trope. This is not a good trope to have, and this is generally frowned upon. Now, I understand that it's generally frowned upon because the majority of the time, it is a female character that is getting killed off, right? Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to bring it up and see what you guys thought about that. While it's not Seven of Nine's love interest, it is somebody that's very important for her, and it is what is driving her for the next 13 years of her life to this point where we see her now.
And what do you think about that, Chrissy?
That had not occurred to me until I saw your tweet. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's true. It doesn't bother me though. Because first of all, it's a different take on it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're kind of spinning it on its head, and we're also changing the relationship of the people involved. And there's a different feeling to a mother avenging her child's death, which is essentially what we're seeing, than a lover avenging another lover's death. Mm-hmm.
I think there's an additional thing as well. Like oftentimes with the fridging trope, it's like girlfriend or wife or whatever. You don't really know anything about this person. You just know them as their connection. Whereas Icheb is a character we've seen before. We know who he is independent of all of this. So I think it's a little bit different because it's not that he's being brought in all of a sudden purely for that motivation. You don't know anything about him, but he's a character that has some history in previous episodes, independent of what's happening here, for you to care about what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, but I actually hadn't thought about it until you brought it up, and I can totally see that, but I think it's a little bit different because he has more dimension to the character than just somebody that's brought in and the only connection they have is to the person seeking revenge.
Yeah. See, like, I don't necessarily have a problem with it either. It's just the first thing where my mind went when I saw this happening. And I saw a lot of people like, yeah, Seven's a badass. Look at her, you know, going there, guns a-blazing. She's such a badass. She's so great. And I'm like, yeah, but I mean, like, nobody seemed to taking a look at it from this other point of view. Maybe I'm wrong in that point of view, but that's where my mind originally went. So, and it's like,
yeah,
if it was the other way, they would be like, talking about the problematic nature of it. So I'm always one of those people that is like, I think there's a term. Somebody's told me this term and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. Maybe Chrissy knows, where it's like, if you take the situation and you flip it for the opposite and it should still be wrong. Right? Like if it's wrong one way, then it should be wrong the other way. So that is all that I'm trying to like think about. And is this what this means to me? Is it wrong both ways? Because I don't necessarily know that it is a bad trope to have, because it is such a common trope. It's like, okay, there's so many, we've talked about last week, tropes and tropes in fiction. Oh, your mission is so difficult and dangerous. Of course I'll help you out. You know, like that's such a trope. And it's like, tropes in general are always across fiction, right? That's how people write. I mean, philosophers have said there's only like six stories out there, and it's just different stories are retelling the same story in a different way. So yes, you're going to hit upon notes that you've heard before in other stories, notes that you've seen in other movies before. So, but even beyond that, so I did have a problem with the scene at the beginning that a few people have hit upon that not everybody's going to be aware of. And like, there's like a distinct, like this distinct focus group of people on Twitter that would be aware of this. And people were tweeting about it immediately. And this is the, they're all like, this is a direct ramification of Manu Interrami's tweets from about 2 years ago when he came out against Anthony Rapp and his sexual assault accusation against Kevin Spacey. So you can go and look this up. I don't want to delve too much into the tweet.
There's more than that too, because if we're going to talk about it,
I think Manu, we need to, because
I think people are talking about it. So we'll talk
about
it.
But
there was what he said, pretty much disparaging what Anthony Rapp was saying with his sexual assault allegations. But then I think even before that, Manu Interrami, who played Icheb in Voyager, said some particularly vile things about women, like very disturbing, terrible things that I think even before that caused people to really turn against him. And I had seen that at the time. I was like, wow. So I think some people have said like, oh, you know, they're killing off Icheb almost as like a revenge tour. That I didn't quite see it that way. Although, I mean, I think the Icheb connection makes sense. It is kind of like this mother-son relationship as a motivation. But I was glad that they recast the actor, because it's a different actor, Casey King, who plays Icheb. So I think that certainly... That certainly was, I think, a conscious decision they made, because Manu Interrami had made some of these offensive comments. I think it was an interesting choice as well. I'm trying to think if there's someone else. People were speculating, like, is it Chakotay or something like that?
That was me. But I was just kidding. I didn't really think it was going to be Chakotay.
There were a few other people who were like, who is that? Is it Hugh or whatever?
But I'd heard Icheb, a few people say Icheb too. But so I've got it up here. So I'm going to read one of the tweets that was brought up and one of the ones that I saw circulating around. You can find this stuff out there. Like, this is not hidden. Okay. But I don't think that a lot of people are aware of it. And so Manu Interrami tweeted this. He says, will the hashtag Star Trekkers stop liking me if I think albino kid tagged is a whiner and Kevin Spacey tagged, his response is admirable. This is an assault. Hashtag PC wimp. So so now he was jumped on immediately for this, rightly so, in my point of view. That like, it's not right. It's so like, because, and he harped on this for a while, like he was standing by the defense of what he said for quite a while after this. And I think that this upset quite a lot of people that are working in the Star Trek. And so as soon as I saw them killing off Icheb in this episode, because Manu Interrami has been like following people and like unfollowing them and following them. He did that to me multiple times to try and get my attention. And I'm like, dude, I'm just not going to follow you back. Okay. And he's been tweeting out, bring back Icheb, bring back Icheb. And to me, this is like, you know what? No.
And they're like, okay, we'll bring him back and kill him with another actor.
Yeah, just to make sure that you will never be here again. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Wow, like, that's what I saw when I saw this. And Chrissy's not aware of this. Not everybody's aware of this, right? Yeah. But I think that this might be a strong influence on the decision to make that scene happen.
Interesting. Well,
I don't know.
I don't know if I've gotten your general thoughts on this scene yet, Chrissy, because we're talking about a lot of directions. Like, no, it's fine.
No, that's okay. We can keep going with it. The thing that bothers me about that, is someone's personal politics going to come into play whether or not they are allowed to be on the show, as it were. Mm-hmm. I think that's where, it's potentially a slippery slope.
Although in this instance, I think some of the things he was saying were really like harassing and very vile.
Understood. Yeah.
In a lot of ways, but yeah. But I don't know. I mean, we'd have to talk to somebody involved in the show to see like what was the decision to bring in Icheb and have a different actor and whatever. But yeah, it's an interesting thing that like I watched it twice and I hadn't thought about that. And then I saw that and I was like, oh, I could see that.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, that is totally interesting.
Yeah. But go ahead, Chrissy.
The scene right off the bat reminded me of the death of Oberyn Martell in Game of Thrones. Mm. Spoiler for season 3, if anybody hasn't seen season 3 of Game of Thrones
season
yet. Season 4, excuse me. Third book, fourth season. So that was the first thing that it made me think of, and do what you will with that. What I don't understand is why these parts have to be taken from them, one, while they're alive, and two, while they're conscious. Mm-hmm. Is there something that happens to the parts if they're euthanized or put under sedation? Or is this person just sadistic? Or is it some combination of those?
Because even in the later in the episode, we don't know why Bjork, what is her name?
Bejazled.
Bejazled. I'm not going to get that name right. I am not going to get that name right.
Bedazzler. Okay,
why? Yeah.
In my head, I was calling her Bedazzle.
Bedazzle.
I was just thinking about
because of her outfit,
stuff.
Too.
Yeah.
It looked bedazzled. Bejazzle.
Why she wants to do this in the first place. Like, there was nothing explained as to what she's doing. She's just like, it's good business, is all she said.
I think she's selling the parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the other note I had. What kind of market is there for Borg pieces? Mm-hmm. I mean, I realize there's a black market for everything, really, but that seems odd.
I mean, I would think if, you know, a lot of that part of the galaxy has been disturbed by, you know, the Romulan supernova and all of those changes, there may be, a shortage of raw materials or resources, and these things become valuable for different things that they need to do. That's what I was thinking.
See, one thing that I've been thinking about is like the surprise that we had a couple weeks ago to find out that the XBs are so well known across the galaxy. Mm-hmm. Right? So here we've got this person who's trying to harvest parts outside of the cube of these X Borgs. Plus, we've got all this stuff that's going on inside the cube, and then kind of jumping ahead to something that's later in the episode, we find out that this cube is not a secret. Like, I don't know where I got it, but I was under the impression that this was like some secret project of the Romulans.
Wasn't under the impression it was a secret, because see lots of different species, lots of different people coming to be on this cube. I got the feeling that like everybody knows about it.
Yeah, so I don't know where I got that. But if you didn't, I guess my interpretation was like, yes, I thought it was secret, but yes, they're bringing all these different people because they want the best in the field. But I was really surprised when Maddox said the artifact and Picard knew exactly what he was talking about. I was very surprised by that.
Well, I figured it was high security. I didn't think it was secret.
Yeah.
But that Picard knowing what it is does not necessarily mean it's not mean that it's well known, because it depending on when this started with the artifact.
Well, he at was least 16 in, years had, before, and I think when they captured it, he must have still been in Starfleet, so he must have gotten some intelligence about it or something. That's possible. I don't know.
So but, I wouldn't don't give up that it might be secret yet.
Semi-secret. But yeah, it is interesting. There's been like this thread about harvesting Borg parts and selling them for something, you know. But someone made a connection also to the I think it was Patrick Carlin, the Voyager episode Inside Man, where these Ferengi are trying to lure Seven to the Alpha Quadrant so they can basically steal her nanoprobes and sell them. So there's some precedent for these things being desirable or worth some money. Mm-hmm. So yeah, for whatever reason.
Yeah, we're dealing with a part of the galaxy that we have not dealt with previously. Yeah. We were right on the edge of it with some of the things that Quark did on DS9, but we've not seen this part of the society. Excuse me.
I mean, I think we're definitely seeing parts of the galaxy or different cultures or societies that aren't part of the Federation, don't have to do with Federation starships or Federation personnel. I mean, you did get some of that on DS9, but there's still a lot of, you know, Federation ships and personnel and that kind of influence, even if it's not part of the Federation. But I get the feeling you're seeing the kinds of things that were kind of always going on outside of what we've seen before.
Yeah.
But now we're just like exclusively focused on that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an interesting choice that they made to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So talked a lot about the opening scene.
Yes.
let's keep going.
Yeah.
Because there is something that happens a little bit before that, but I'm going to go ahead to Seven and Picard. So we did see Seven beam onto La Sirena previous week, and now we finally get to see some conversations between them. And Picard is kind of talking about, you know, the mission that they're on, and I think eventually convinces Seven to stay on for a little bit. But I mean, I think as we've seen in some of the previews, this is a Seven who's more casual, drinking bourbon, you know, doing all of this vigilante stuff. So I thought it was a good way for them to have a conversation and to just illustrate that. So I wanted to get your thoughts, I guess, first on that kind of opening scene with Seven and Picard and what I'm calling his ready study.
Oh, I like that.
The ready study.
Yeah. Yeah. Chrissy?
My first thought, because recently the episode where she takes like two sips of champagne and then feels drunk was, wow, Seven learned how to drink. It's the way she just knocks back that bourbon. Mm-hmm. Mm. And it also answered the question, I think I might have said this last week, about where that study was. Because I've been waiting for them to go back so that she can confront him at the vineyard. But we didn't have to. Mm-hmm.
That's right. I thought it was pretty interesting. I mean, we've seen some of these lines like, what the hell are you doing out here, Picard, saving the galaxy, but there is a part that you didn't see in the trailer, like, what the hell are you doing out here besides being in way over your head?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I heard that line and I was like, that kind of completely describes what Picard is. He's in way over his head and doesn't really know like where he's going or what's going to happen or the consequences. So I thought that was a good summary. And I thought it was funny that she said, I assumed it was some kind of misguided diplomatic mission.
Yes.
And I think like there were some things going on, like the character is different, but I think it very, because I've been doing a rewatch of all of the episodes that Seven's been in over the past, I don't know, 4 to 6 months or something like that. And the impression that you get again and again is Seven is very much not interested in like diplomacy or talking. She's all about like action and doing things the efficient way and, you know, all of that. And there are times on Voyager when she like tries to go around the system or do things without getting authorization. So like there's something about like seeing that in Voyager, rewatching all of those episodes, that fits very much, for me at least, into what we're seeing of her here.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, but I think it's a good growth for her character. And it's really interesting to see her in this place because, you know, we saw, like, when did Voyager get back? Do we know what year that was?
2378.
78.
So that would be 21 years before this.
21 years, okay. So 8 years later, like, Icheb is in Starfleet. Right. Mm-hmm. I think they said he's a lieutenant.
Mm-hmm. Lieutenant science officer. Yeah.
Right. So he's went through the academy for 4 years and then he's been working for 4 years. And Seven didn't really find her place, which is kind of interesting. You know, she didn't really find her place. As she says, like later in the episode there, when they're on Free Cloud, she's like, when she's talking about what she did, she said, the Fenris Rangers, some of us, we tried to maintain order on the worlds the Federation left behind. And to me, mm-hmm. like, instantly, I'm thinking the Maquis and the Demilitarized Zone or some shade of this, some shadow of this, you know? Not necessarily the Demilitarized Zone itself, but this is also, like, how people are seeing what the Federation did after Mars.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it definitely... I hadn't really thought about the Maquis until you're bringing it up earlier, but I think that does make sense because it does seem like there are, you know, planets along the neutral zone that were part of the Federation that aren't anymore, and where all of this stuff is happening. Because at a certain point, it's like, you're taking the law into your own hands. What law? Mm-hmm. Oh, point taken. Like, out here, it's pretty lawless because the Federation, it makes it seem like the Federation has had to contract somewhat because they've lost so many resources and all these things have happened and all of that. So the Federation, at least in that area, is kind of like in decline or receding and leaving behind a lot of a vacuum and a lot of problems, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is pretty interesting because I think we're going to see this to a greater degree in Discovery Season 3, which is like, you know, 800 years after this. But like, this is the first time I think we're seeing something where the Federation isn't just like exploring and expanding outward, but has started to contract somewhat. And like all of the things that happen around that and what they leave behind. So I thought that was a really interesting like glimpse. I mean, we've only really seen it on Vashti, but I wonder if we'll see it a bit more in other places.
A few other places. This brings back to me this discussion that we've been having that I keep saying. I'm like, where I don't what the even reading the book, like I don't see what the Federation has done post Mars has been wrong, and I'm still not seeing that, right? Like, because when we read the book and, you know, the Federation Council and the CNC at the time and Clancy, who was a captain at the time, were supporting Picard's mission, supporting Picard's idea to work with the Romulans to evacuate these Romulan colonies. And the Federation kept meeting wall after wall with the Romulans, misinformation with how big this explosion of the sun was going to affect, how big of an area it was going to affect. And so they had to like work on their feet and find other places. And so after this Mars mission, or after this Mars explosion, this Mars attack, like with them crippling their forces, I'm still not seeing that they made the wrong call, you know, because of what I've seen in the book and what I've seen in the show, they supported it as long as they could. I don't know.
Here's the thing, though, and I just thought of this while you were talking about this. Who is looking at it as the wrong call? Okay, Picard's looking at it as the wrong call. Raffi's looking at it as the wrong call. We as the viewer are supposed to feel that way.
Right, and so because Picard is our lead character, and Picard is our entry point to this series, this is the person that we have the most connection to, right? So we're, as far as how I understand television making, because of this, we're supposed to be sharing the point of view of our main character.
Yeah.
Right? So Picard's the one who has the big wrong point of view on this. But not only him, apparently there's a bunch of other people around in this area, like Seven's working directly with them as well, that think the Federation might have done the wrong thing.
Okay, so two historical analogies here. Mm-hmm. We'll get to this a little bit early.
Yay!
The first one.
Chrissy's History Corner. Yeah.
And I just thought of this. Right? Oh, I like that jingle. Right, okay, so two examples of collapse of empire. Let's take the Federation as an empire. I know it's not, but fine. The Roman Empire, as it is pulling in on itself, leaves behind quasi-Roman areas. Mm-hmm. Roman Britain is one of the first places they leave behind. North Africa, which was one of the first places they conquered 800 years previously. And the people in those areas probably felt left behind. Okay, because they were dealing with invasions from other groups, Visigoths coming in and all that type of thing. And the other thing this made me think of is the collapse of the Soviet Union. Did you guys watch Chernobyl over the summer?
I did, yeah.
I know Brandon did, I didn't.
Oh, so good. Highly recommended. Everybody who's listening, finish listening to this, go watch Chernobyl. Right, so Chernobyl was one of the reasons the Soviet Union collapsed. Mm-hmm. It was on its way, but this pulled so many resources into that that they didn't have them elsewhere. And it's not long after that. That happens in 86.
Yeah,
86. And then it's only 3 years later, the wall's down in Germany. And that is in part because the USSR is not able to maintain that control over the outside areas, which also means they don't get the supplies and the goods that they need. Yeah. So, you know, the people in Poland, in East Germany, felt left behind. But it was because they had to pull in those resources. Mm-hmm. So if Mars is Chernobyl, as Praxis was Chernobyl, mm-hmm. there's a logical following to mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. So here's the way that I've been thinking about it, Brendan. Like, when we've thought about the Federation before, and I think when people within the Federation or within Starfleet think about it, they think about it as something that has unlimited resources and can take on any task mm-hmm. it sets its mind to. Mm-hmm. But, and I especially got this sense from the book, this is the biggest thing they've ever undertaken as the Romulan rescue mission. Mm-hmm. And it's really highlighted a lot in The Last Best Hope, where it's like, okay, so what do we have to do first? All right, there are these areas. They won't let us into the home system. Let's, you know, try to do that. It requires lots of ships. Okay, it's getting worse. They're going to let us go closer. And it just seems like there's more and more and more and more demands on their resources. And it's really stretching it. And then when the attack on Mars happens, it's like, it's a big setback. And it's kind of, and I think, some of what may be happening where Picard and others are seeing it as the wrong call is that they have an unrealistic expectation of infinite resources for the Federation. Just, you know, whatever they have that creates their more utopian society or whatever, there are always limits to these things. I mean, they may have what seems like an unlimited amount of energy and resources, but it is not actually infinite. And I think this is the thing that takes it to that breaking point where finally they're like, we can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think Picard has the expectation, well, we always put everything we can into saving people, but this is like the one thing it feels like in the Federation's history that's too much even for them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Absolutely. And so that's why I'm like, it doesn't feel like the wrong call to me. Like, they did everything they could for as long as they could.
However, there is another way to see it, which is maybe this kind of, they stretched themselves way too far and they couldn't save everyone, but maybe they could have it on some reduced scale to at least save some people. Mm-hmm. But I think part of what Picard is getting at and others are getting at is if you couldn't do all of it, you just gave up. Right? Like, it's like, if you can't do 100%, maybe you can do 50%, 30%, 10%. But they decided to, you know, have this ban on the synthetics and basically pull back completely down to 0%. I think that's part of what's going on is not that it would be realistic at that point to do everything, but to do something. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they just stopped and did nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are blaming them for, that they could have saved more people.
You could have saved more. Okay. Because like, even in the last episode, when we heard that nun say that to him, you couldn't save mm-hmm. them all. So you chose to save none. And I'm like, I don't think I mentioned this last week, but I'm like, that's not true because he saved a bunch of people already.
Well, she doesn't say save none. She says you chose to give up. I think they recognize that there are a lot that they save. I mean, even I think, you know, with the Co-op Milot, they save like 250,000 or something. So there's mm-hmm. a lot that they've mm-hmm. saved.
Yeah.
But I think what she says is you gave up. Like at that point, you said, we're not saving anymore.
I'll need to go back to that line.
I have a problem with that.
I'm sure she said, you chose to save none. I'll have to go back.
She said, so you chose to give
up.
I thought. But like, it's a really interesting thing because it feels like where it's going, right, is that there is this ban on synthetics and pulling back because of some nefarious influence, Romulan or something else. So they have to actually convince us that that nefarious influence led to something happening that was the wrong call, mm-hmm. right? And I'm thinking that it has to do with them just deciding to save no more when they could have saved some more mm-hmm. if they had gone forward with the synthetics and all that. But mm-hmm. it's a very interesting question, because I do think a lot of times we've seen the Federation as something that can take on any task and has kind of unlimited resources. Mm-hmm. But they actually don't.
Right.
And that's brought up when Samuel Clemens is on the ship in Time Zero and he's talking to Troy. Yeah, I know, but I thought of this because he's right, even though Troy is telling him he's wrong. He says, "Oh, you know, you all live on this ship in the lap of luxury, but what about poverty? What about the people on Earth? What about the people from the blue planet over the blue guy over there?" Mm-hmm. And he's right.
Well, I mean, I think they've been able to do those things within the Federation, right? Mm-hmm. But but then when there's a big like shock to the system, like the stretching themselves within with the rescue mission and then having the Mars attack, like they can't sustain it as much and have to start contracting a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway. I think we've spent about 40 minutes talking about the first two topics, so we should probably keep
going. And we're depressed now. Okay.
But that's just it. I think there's more here that, like, I'm not caught up on, like, political and social events. Like, I do my best, right? I mean, like, I do my best to read on these things and take in other people's perspectives, because I know that my experience is extremely limited. But I almost think that there's something here of, like, you know, like, North American culture in general. Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of feel like I'm on the edge of it, where it's like, the 80s is how we saw ourselves at the time. We weren't seeing everything. Yeah. And then now, with people speaking up and people being able to get their points of view across, we're seeing that it's never been as rosy as we thought it was. You know, that's kind of what I'm getting out of this now. And I mean, like, there's a lot of people who are having some issues with how the story's being told, right? Because they're like, this isn't how it's been shown before. This isn't how Star Trek's been shown before. We've never seen things like this before. And I'm like, yes, but like, we had a very limited perspective on things before.
We really did. I mean, we had the perspective of seeing the galaxy of Star Trek basically through the eyes of Federation or Starfleet officers, and a few others, right? There are some others like Neelix or Quark or whatever, but for the most part, it's seeing it through that perspective, but there's a lot else that's going on, right? And this is kind of delving into that. So it is different, but I mean, I think it's very much a part of and influenced by everything that we've seen before, but it's building on something different. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that it's different, you know? So... Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that was a great discussion, but let's keep going, because we've been talking about it for a while, like that this is the search for Maddox. When are we going to see Maddox? We saw Maddox in this episode. Mm-hmm. So Maddox is in Stardust City on Free Cloud. Apparently, the Tal Shiar found his lab and not only destroyed it, but just molecular solvent to dissolve it.
Melted
so it's
lab.
All gone. Yeah. Right. And he's on the run, and he comes and he deals with this character, Bedazzler, Bejazel, whatever. and she thinks she's going to kill him, but then she's going to help him out. And there's like this whole thing that's going on with, you know, the crew of La Sirena trying to get Maddox. And there's like a whole setup for that. So there's like a bunch of stuff that's going on, I think, with Maddox and around Stardust City and all of that. So we'll talk about it as one topic, but Chrissy, like, your thoughts on, you know, Maddox and what we see in Stardust City.
I don't think she was going to help him. I think she was delaying killing him until she got what she needed out of him.
What does she need out of him?
I don't know.
Oh, so who's this? Bjork?
And she's dissolved now, so we won't know.
Bjork?
What?
Bjork? Is that who
Bjork,
we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So, this is what I got out of the story, because, again, they're dumping stuff, and it takes me a couple of viewings to catch all the details that they're talking about.
It does,
Oh, I definitely didn't get the details in the first viewing.
So Maddox has borrowed money for her to do this lab.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm guessing that this money that he borrowed was to create Soji and Dash. Right? And
that makes sense.
So now the Tal Shiar got involved and they destroyed his lab and he left. And so now he can't pay Bejeweled back. Okay. So now So she has him there, and so she tries to arrange a meeting with a facer, which I don't know what a facer is. What the hell is a facer?
Short for interfacer? Well, I think Rafi was saying it's like a go-between, somebody that brokers things for like companies and criminal gangs and things like that. So it's like a broker of meetings and things, I guess.
Okay, this word facer just kept throwing me off.
It was short for interfacer. It's supposed to be like futuristic, but it was interesting.
Okay, so they're looking for this facer to broker a meeting between her and the Tal Shiar. So the Tal Shiar can buy Maddox from her. Right. So she gets her money back and they get Maddox. Okay. So that would make sense.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what's going on.
That makes sense.
And then so our crew comes with the idea that they're going to, instead of representing the Tal Shiar, they're going to represent this other guy who has a Borg with a bunch of stuff inside of her. And so because they know that this person wants Borg technology. So they're going to try and trade, in a nutshell, 7 of 9 for Maddox, but it's a scheme. Mm-hmm. Okay, right. So instead they're going to trade 7 of 9 for Maddox to get him out of there and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on. Like, but again, it took me like 3 viewings because I watched this thing 3
and
times.
And I've seen it 3 times, that, and I got most of that, but not all of that.
Yeah, so, like, that's good. So I don't know if this thing needed a rewrite or what, but like this was kind of, this seemed pretty complex for what was going on. So Rios goes down there and shows Lizard Man the thing of 7 and says, okay, they do it, and they get this set up. So, and then everybody dresses up. And look, I like this episode a lot, but this is where there's a couple of issues that I have with the episode here. So I'm glad that we're all on the same page, and I'm glad that I kind of got the plot going on here. But I won't really talk about my problems right now because they're not that important right now. So,
okay.
So let's keep going.
Okay. Now that we know what happened, Chrissy?
Okay, so right, Bejazel knows 7.
I know you're saying the name right, but I'm still laughing.
It's so ridiculous. Bejazel knows 7 well enough to know that she's Annika Hansen.
Mm-hmm. I got okay. So
I think I know where you're going. Go ahead.
I got the idea that these guys had like a sexual relationship at one point.
Yeah, romantic relationship. That's absolutely what I got.
Oh, I totally did not get that. I saw that people were saying that.
Close personal relationship is what Bejazel says at some point, and I totally took that to be either that or they were besties at one point, best friends.
Yeah, I got that it was I got that it was beyond that, and that's why 7 is so mad. It was because Bejazel went there under the ruse of getting involved in the Fenris Rangers, but she did it as a ruse to get to Icheb, which still doesn't quite make sense to me, because why would she go after Icheb when she's got 7? Okay, but then she fell in love with 7, I guess.
Maybe she cared more for it, but it's a little odd.
And then 7 was betrayed, and that's why she's so angry as well. So she's angry because, from my interpretation, her lover betrayed her, and she lost her quote-unquote child. So,
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, because so she calls her Annika. 7 calls her Jay instead of trying to pronounce Bedazzle.
We should probably do that from now on, too.
We'll say Jay.
Yeah, we'll say Jay.
Although I've been writing a Jay in my notes for Jurati, but anyway.
Oh, okay.
Jay's fine.
So they know each other quite well. Mm-hmm. My question was, because I didn't go where you guys did with it, was why did she go to using the name Annika Hansen and then go back to 7?
Here's
or
what
was
I got
that just the personal relationship.
Here's what I got out of that. So after Voyager returned from the Delta Quadrant, what I got out of that was at a certain point, and this happens in the novels, but anyway, at a certain point she reconnects, at least I guess with her Aunt Irene or something, some family that she has left, right? And starts thinking of herself as Annika as she tries to kind of go through more of the process of reclaiming her humanity.
Yeah.
Then I think what happened was she called herself Annika, but after this thing happened with Icheb, I think she went back to calling herself 7, kind of as a way of showing, like, as a way maybe of remembering Icheb or showing solidarity for, you know, former Borg that are being exploited in this way. That's what I got out of it.
See, and I got out of it that the only reason she was calling her Annika was because of the relationship that they had.
That could be.
So, yeah.
Either way. And they mentioned the Conclave of Eight.
Yeah, yes. I had that as one of my
questions.
That's
the first time we've heard that, right?
Yeah, I don't remember that in the book. I don't remember this before at all. That's
one
of my questions. What is this?
Yeah, and I had to look it up to remind myself. Conclave is like a private meeting.
Right.
Or, you know, it's cardinals behind closed doors choosing a pope. So
could be.
Probably
watch
not that
for the
here.
White smoke.
Space yes. Pope. That's got to be a future
people choosing the space pope. Yeah. But yeah, Conclave of Ape, that, I mean, they are dropping little things. And when, oh, that happened in the scene with Rafi, right? But yeah, Conclave of Eight is something new for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a lot of like interconnected things that were happening at Stardust City.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a lot.
I liked that they did the back and forth between the preparation and the scene. Again, mm-hmm. I know some people are really hating
on
that.
Did that work for you this time, Brandon?
Nope.
No.
Didn't work for you?
Okay.
It totally worked
overly
for me.
Complex again. I mean...
See, what I... Okay, let me just... I'll just say once. One of the things that I like that they're doing there is that they're doing something that's nonlinear with time. Like, there's something that's happening, and then they're going back to the preparation and back and forth. I liked it. Sorry it didn't work for you, but it worked for me.
Okay, so I'm watching with my daughter. Now, she's 9, right? And she doesn't get the subtleties of filmmaking sometimes. But there was a point when Patrick Stewart was down on the planet, when Picard was down on the planet, and then it cut to him on the ship with Raffi. And she's like, so did he fail?
I could see that. That'd be confusing. Yeah.
So, like, some of it worked, but not all of it worked. And even when I was watching it, that one didn't work, you know? And so I'm like, okay, so you've gone a little too far with your fancy editing here. So
I liked it. Okay.
Fancy Frakes.
That's fine. Yeah.
Fancy Frakes. There we go. Instead of Frosted.
Is that Frakes? Is that Frakes or is that the editor? See, I don't know how all this stuff works. Like, is that in the script? Is that Frakes' choice? Is that the editor's choice? I don't know how that all works. Like,
I have to interview them to find out. But yeah, I get the feeling it's kind of an interplay. Like the director might have a certain idea, but the editor maybe had some freedom. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But I think this is the episode where we're processing it the most in real time as to like what actually happened in the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Am I right? Yeah. So, I mean, but there was a lot that, okay, let's talk about this. Maddox. So,
yes.
So we see Maddox. He's played by a different actor. It actually took me a little bit to realize that. I was like, is that Brian Brophy? Is it somebody else? It's a guy named John Ailes, I think. Yeah. So what did you guys think about, you know, Maddox and the actor who played him and how it came across? Like, did that work for you, Brandon?
I thought it was fine. I was pretty certain right away that it wasn't the same actor, which it was a little disappointing. A few people have tweeted out that they've looked up and he's a teacher now and he's retired. But I'm like, for an opportunity like this, for one episode, I'm like, the guy, if they pitched him like that, like,
who knows? There could have been personal reasons, like I haven't done acting for a while, don't know if I could do it,
or
whatever. But I think they did find somebody who I think he did a good job. Mm-hmm. And I like that we saw Maddox finally.
Yeah. I liked the reference. And again, this is a treat for the people who've read the book. I liked seeing the home video of Girardi and Maddox making the cookies. I thought that was really sweet because of the relationship that we got in the book. So we read the book after, I think it was after episode 3 is when I read it. I think it was between 3 and 4 that it came out.
Yeah, you read it between 3 and 4. I read most of it between 3 and 4 and then finished it.
And I did not get the impression from the first 3 episodes that they had any previous relationship of any sort. So getting that in the book, I was like, oh, I didn't expect that. That's weird. That kind of came out of nowhere. And then so to see that in this, I was like, it was just really nice to see that. I liked that a lot. So
for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. That was nice.
I'm the odd one out here because from the time that she said Bruce Maddox, I felt that she had the tone of
the way that she said it, like Bruce Maddox, like she was being overly familiar and realized it. Yeah, I could see that now. Mm-hmm. But I think that's an interesting choice that they had a relationship. And I do feel a little bad for the actor playing Maddox because he spent like most of the episode like unconscious or dying. I was like, oh man, I feel really bad for this guy.
Good actor, though.
I just want to say, though, before we get too far, though, that what she was watching that on, I want to know what version of the iPhone that is that can, like, project
it up. Holophone?
Like, yeah. Like, that's like...
They do have holographic phones. It's pretty cool.
iPhone
H. When can we do that? Yeah. Would you like to do that? Like, wouldn't it be cool if you could have your phone and you could, you know, watch Picard and just, like, project it from your phone onto, like, a screen on the wall?
Wouldn't it be cool?
Yeah. You can do that now.
Yeah?
Yeah, with a couple extra pieces of technology, you can do that now.
I don't even have a cell phone.
But I want it to come, like, right out of my phone.
All right. You can do that? No, you can't do that.
Okay. See, that's the thing. The holographic part of it. Anyway. So, there was all this stuff that was going on with Maddox, all the stuff on, you know, Stardust City. I thought the costumes were kind of fun. This was an interesting episode as well because, like, there are, you know, three kind of brutal killings in this episode of Icheb, of Bejazel, and of Maddox at the end. But then, like, interspersed with it, there were kind of, like, these funny moments. Like, there were the ads and, like, some of the banter and all of that, and Elnor being comic relief, which I didn't expect.
That was weird.
So, like, it was such an interesting, like, mix of those things, because it was really heavy and really dark in parts, but it was also had, like, some humor and levity. Mm-hmm. What'd you guys think of that?
Rios bouncing his way into the club.
Oh my God. I totally laughed fantastic. At that, because he was going in and he was like, of course, the listeners can't see this, but he's just, like, bouncing a little bit back and forth. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there were moments like that where I was like, this is really serious, but I'm laughing because he's just so cute, just, like, doing his little bobble dance on the floor. But, like, did that... I mean, what did you think about that? Because there was definitely a mix of tones in the different scenes.
Yeah, there's very much an interesting tone. Like, this is an odd episode because of that, because there's so much heavy and so much light, you know. And it's like, I'm going to compare it to one of my favorite episodes of Enterprise, where they've got an A plot that's amazing and they've got a B plot that's amazing, but together they're not quite right. And that's Silent Enemy. So we've got this thing going on where we've got these aliens, they're attacking us, we don't know what's going on, they don't talk to us, they're coming on our ship, and Hoshi's looking for pineapple cake, right?
But I love that those two things are happening, because why shouldn't she be looking for pineapple cake amidst the mystery?
I love both of them. I don't think they work together in the same episode. That's just me. But I love both A and B. I think there's nothing wrong with either plot. It's just together they're not quite right. And this kind of has that feel to me where it's like we've seen this stuff in Star Trek before. Like, you look at this and you think of Bada Bing, Bada Bang, right? You think of the Royale.
I did think of that, you know, with Borg murder going on.
With Borg murder going on. You know, and so also the main plot also feels like a Star Trek episode where they're like, okay, we got to break in and get this guy out, right? How are we going to get in without getting caught? Like, even there, like, it's a very Star Trek plot, but with television the way that it is right now, it feels really weird to have this off-tone episode from what we've got so far. Like, I look at the shows that I watch, you know, like, you know, Game of Thrones and Mindhunter and, like, all these shows, and they have a consistent tone throughout. Like, I don't watch The Walking Dead, and all of a sudden one of these episodes is just all of a sudden funny and silly.
Yeah, you know? but I mean, maybe it feels different because this is serialized, but Star Trek has always had quite a mix of tones.
Absolutely.
Like, it's never had one tone.
But that's not really how TV's done nowadays. We've got a 10-episode arc to tell this story. We got 10 episodes to tell this story, and to suddenly tonally shift, it's just, it's kind of feels weird to me. I don't hate the episode. Hmm. I like the episode. Okay. But it's just, it feels weird to have this tonal shift when you've got such a limited amount of time to tell the story that you want to tell.
But the way that I see it, I mean, I think we would get this more like when you have longer seasons of 26 episodes where, for example, like, there's a really heavy Dominion war arc, right? And then all of a sudden they're playing baseball with Vulcans the next episode, right? Like, and then it goes back to the war. But I see that kind of thing happening here within the episode, and I actually really like it, because I think if they didn't have those funny moments and those tonal shifts in places, it would have been, like, even heavier, and it would be a harder thing for me to watch if it didn't have some of those things within it.
But I mean, like, if it was just pick up a Star Trek book And picture, like, you've got a 10-chapter Star Trek book that's got this stuff going on, and while you're reading, like, a 300-page novel, all of a sudden, 20 pages in this is just suddenly funny. Like,
I don't know if I've seen that for 20 pages, but I have definitely seen Star Trek novels where there's some really serious stuff going on, and there are funny moments that help.
That's right, funny moments, but not, like, a whole subplot that's all of a sudden going on. There's always humorous elements. Mm. Somebody will say something. They'll have some off-color mark. It'll be funny. Some type of weird comment that happens. That stuff does happen. And yes, that stuff happens all the time. This stuff happens in life. But I don't know. It just... Yeah. I won't harp too much on this because, again,
I can totally see that.
I don't hate the episode. I don't. I enjoyed the episode a lot. I think it's good.
So, you keep saying that. Have you seen Deadpool?
I have not.
No.
You need to see Deadpool.
Sorry, Chrissy, I'm failing on all of your things where you're like, have you seen that?
Don't,
sorry.
Don't feel bad. There's so many things I haven't seen, so don't even worry about it.
The only Marvel I've seen is Doctor Strange. That's the only Marvel movie I've seen.
Well, but Deadpool's an X-Man, technically speaking. Okay.
Yeah.
See Deadpool, and then you will see a beautiful combination of very serious moments, serious violence, and utter ridiculousness. And it all works.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that this episode is Deadpool, but the way you were describing it, I hadn't thought of it until you did that. It reminds me of Deadpool.
But that's the style of what that movie is and what Deadpool does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's lots of stuff like this. Like, I've got a movie, I got a French film called Man Bites Dog, right? Which is like this bizarre movie that is playing with your senses the entire time. You are laughing at one moment and then it immediately cuts to a gruesome body murder, right? And the aftermath of the murder. So while the cut happens, you're laughing. And then all of a sudden you're shocked out of laughing. So the movie is playing with your emotions the entire time. And that happens in movies. And that could be a style of a movie and whatnot. Yes, absolutely. And that's kind of what the style of Deadpool would be. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just say that it was a little difficult on a first viewing, but like when I was seeing it the second and third time, I was working with the mix.
And I agree with that sentence 100%. The first time I'm like, what the heck's going on? Second and third, I've seen it three times now. I'm like, okay, I'm enjoying this quite a bit. So,
okay. So, anything else we want to say about Maddox and Stardust City?
I love the ads. We just briefly mentioned the ads, but
yeah,
the fact that they are almost, they are tailored to each person.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the one that Dr. Girardi gets.
It's based on like their browsing history, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
A tea place for Picard. Yes. It makes sense that the captain of the ship gets an ad to have repairs done.
Right.
And then Raffi gets the smoke shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you notice what Girardi got? I mean, yes.
Yeah,
it's
that was
this,
the one that
like,
was out of place.
Well, robots. Actually not, because it took a while because it's like talking and punching and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's actually it's inviting her to apply for a job in entertainment robotics. So they've seen that she has a specialty in robotics and they're asking her to apply for a job. Is what's going on.
I misunderstood that. Okay.
Yeah, the first time I didn't get it. And then I read the subtitles and I was like, oh, okay. They're trying to get her to work for them in entertainment robotics, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So that was it's like, you know, on LinkedIn
sense.
When you get something from some random recruiter like, "Oh, I'd love to have you work here," you know, like anyway.
I thought they were trying to get her to go to a gym and fight robots or something.
No. I mean, it was a weird thing like, "Apply for this job, I'm going to punch you out." It's like that's an odd thing. But I did think that was pretty funny because, you know, FreeCloud is all about making money, apparently, and in order just to like put your ship into orbit, you have to watch ads. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. They're literal pop-ups.
Yeah, literal pop-ups.
They really are. So,
That was totally on my list here. I'm like, wow, this is beyond like this is invasive to the next level because it's like reading their minds or something like that, you know. So,
yeah.
And then nothing for Elnor because he has no vices,
or they just don't know what to sell to somebody who's truthful all the time or something. I don't know.
And then did you catch that line? Oh, ho, ho. Bajazel? Oh, do you know him?
Yeah.
They did emphasize him again.
Yeah.
It's just,
which is odd, but oh well, one of those things. Okay, so let's keep going here because, I mean, I mentioned it briefly, but you know, there are these things that happen. They are trying to extract Maddox, and then you find out at a certain point, like we've talked about, that that Seven wants to get revenge for Icheb being, you know, just like horrifically maimed and killed by Bajazel's people. So, you know, she threatens her and then seems to be talked down by Picard and beams back onto the ship. And that's where they have that great conversation about regaining your humanity. But then, you know, she convinces Picard to take two phasers and then has got this pattern enhancer that Rios has given back to her slyly, and goes back down to the planet to kill Bajazel. So one question I have is, does Picard know that this is what Seven's going to do? Because it seemed like at a certain point there was a look from him like he kind of understood what was going on at that point.
Like when he's like, paused and went, of course. That's interesting that you think that Rios left that there for her intentionally. Like, I wasn't sure if he did
I had to watch it closely, like on the second or third viewing. But, you know, Rios, she gives it to Rios. They beam up. And then what Rios does is he puts it on the console without Picard seeing, and then Seven goes around to the console and pockets it. So he knows what she's going to do as well, right? I think. So, but anyway, I thought that was interesting because, you know, Picard gives this great speech to, you know, not do revenge, and I think it's interesting that when Seven's talking to Bajazel, she's like, yeah, I didn't want to disillusion Picard. Somebody's got to have hope out there. It's like, wow. And then she just kills her and then guns blazing out the door. So, I mean, but what did you think about kind of the decision that she makes to actually go forward with her revenge and kind of where we see her at this point? We'll see where we see her in the future. Brendan?
Based on how the episode was going, it felt like the right payoff for the episode to me.
I think based for on sure. what we've seen of Seven, where she is now, it makes sense. And if she hadn't done that, it might not have made sense that she was convinced of that. But
yeah,
Chrissy, do you feel the same way? Or
that made perfect sense.
That's a simpler answer than I thought I was going to get.
it made sense. It's like it's one of those things where it's like it's. The way that television has been written in the past, and again, we are in very different times. Like, that's not a very Star Trek thing to do. And I'm not saying that, like, it's a bad thing. It's just in Star Trek, they always hold the gun to the head, and then they're like, no, but I'm going to let you go to live another day because we're the heroes. Right. And so
when they're Starfleet officers, she's not in Starfleet, also.
Right. But even, you know, even still, we see that lots. And we don't get that here. So it's tonally, it's shocking. But it's in a good way to me, I think, you know, so I'm glad that she did because, you know, if Bejeweled, but Bjork did that to Jay, that's right, did that to Icheb and betrayed Seven, you know, like I can understand her anger, right?
It's I mean, I totally understand it for the character. It's always hard for me to see something like that because I don't like to see people die. But I think it for her character and where she's at that point, it makes sense. All right. So let's talk about another part of the episode, which was, I mean, it's related because it's on Free Cloud and Stardust City, but it's kind of a different part of the plot. And that's where Raffi is going to see her son, Gabriel or Gabe, who we had seen in the book before as a really young child. And we saw how the Romulan rescue mission kind of took a toll on her marriage and her relationship with her son. So you're seeing him all these years later and, you know, his wife has a baby. I think his wife was Romulan as far as I can tell.
But her name was Pell. So like that sounds like a Vulcan name because I don't like
Pell is also a Ferengi name.
Yes, there was a Pell. But I mean like she was definitely Romulan because of the forehead and the thing. Forehead she was like ridges, the she was like the Romulan in Nemesis. That was on the
Denatra.
Denatra.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the line, I don't know where I heard this. This is just going off a little tangent. The T apostrophe has something to indicate with like marital status.
Yes.
I don't know where I heard this.
I think there was something about that, although it's, I don't know if that's ever been said on screen.
Yeah. But. So like to hear Pell was interesting, but I mean, that also signifies.
Wasn't Tuvok's wife to Pell? Am I remembering that?
I can't remember. Yeah.
I think so.
But I think T is like a Mrs.
Yeah, could be, could be,
could be. But so anyway, so she goes to see, and it's I think it was a really like heartbreaking kind of conversation because mm-hmm. she's coming to him. He feels like she spent all of this time focused on other people's lives and not his and his dad's. And she's kind of coming to him and, you know, saying something I don't know if she had said explicitly, like she's gotten clean now. She's not addicted. She's trying to improve her life and he just doesn't want any part of it. And I think it was, I mean, I've had some really tough relationships with some of my family and it was hitting home a little bit. So I thought it was, I mean, partly I think it's there because she said she was going to Free Cloud and now she's coming back to the ship. But I think it's also an illustration of like the very personal toll that this whole thing that's happened like over the last few decades with the Romulan rescue mission and the attack on Mars and all of that. And, you know, she's talking about her conspiracy theories and all that. And he's just like, I don't want to hear anything about it. So yeah, I thought it was kind of heartbreaking to watch, but it was pretty interesting to see here because it was also a different tone than some of the other parts of the episode. Mm-hmm. But Chrissy, what did you think about this part?
It was very expressive of exactly what was going on. By the end of it, you were just as hurt as Rafi was, and yet you also could understand where her son was coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think they leaned way too heavily on the book here.
Think so?
I knew, you know, when she looked up Gabe, I forget what the last name was.
Wang.
And I said, oh, that's her son. You know, but
you know, I didn't make the connection. For some reason, I didn't make the connection at first. I was like, who's this Gabriel Wang?
I didn't either because, at first, yeah.
Because in the book, he's specifically referred to as Gabe, so I wasn't even thinking about that until I was like, oh, her son. So
I figured she was going after family to go to Free Cloud anyway. And that makes the most sense.
I didn't
sense.
Know.
Mm-hmm. It was one of my, you know, thoughts about it.
Yeah,
so, I mean. So, yeah, and I understand perfectly why he rejected her. What I thought was interesting, because as I said before, I watched this with my family, right? Mm-hmm. My mother and I both interpret it as she has been hurt to the core by her son. Okay. My father said, she's mad, and she's going to go find the person who did the conspiracy that she understands is happening, and nobody else believes her, and she's going to take care of that person or that group in order to vindicate herself for her son.
Oh,
so
I just thought that was
very interesting how it was differently interpreted watching it the exact same time.
Because I definitely interpreted it as she was just very, very hurt by her son's reaction and by the things that she's done in the past to kind of bring this about. I didn't think in that moment she was thinking about like going after the conspirators or whoever she thinks. Because
yeah,
I mean,
either, but
because also like this relationship isn't just because the breakdown of this relationship isn't just because of the attack on Mars.
Right.
We know from the book, like it was happening before then, and it makes sense. Like this rescue mission, she was gone for months and months, and like
years.
It was just years, actually, right? Yeah, I think it's like 3 or 4 years, and so it was really taking a toll before that. So that's an interesting interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're not mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. She could be incredibly angry and also incredibly hurt, but that just struck me as interesting on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
So.
So what do you think of this scene?
I love this scene. This is my favorite scene in the episode, is this scene with her and her son. You know, I interpreted that she was hurt here, but some of the things that I really liked was Michelle Hurd's portrayal of Rafi. Like, Rafi's my favorite character in the show right now. I love Rafi. I think she's a great character. I think Michelle Hurd is wonderful. You know, like that when they were dressing up Rios and she did that little hand movement.
Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful.
Nosh.
Wonderful. This woman is a wonderful actress. And
she's really inhabiting the role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when she goes down there, like, you mentioned it too. I mentioned it. I'm sure I've mentioned in the past. Like, I've got a lot of drug and alcohol addiction in my family. And, you know, like, Rafi goes down there and she lies to her son. Okay.
Yeah.
She lies to him that she's clean and she's putting her life back together. She's not. How long ago was she on Earth? Days. She was smoking this stuff days ago and her life was not in order a few days ago. She's lying
to you. You think it's only been days?
It's only been days, right?
Yeah. I thought it'd been weeks.
But... well, even still, you don't clean up your life in a matter of weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, she was just smoking this stuff. Like, I can't remember the snake oil or whatever they called it.
Snake leaf?
Snake leaf, just a little while ago. Okay? And so, like...
See, I didn't interpret it that way. I interpreted it as, yeah, maybe it hasn't been that long, but she has made this commitment, and she's really, like, trying not to day by day and hasn't since she left Earth. That's how I interpreted it.
And she's not just lying to her son. She's lying to herself in that moment. Right? Like, it's just like there's a subtle layer there. There's a depth to what she's doing is that this is the person she wants to be. She wants to be clean. She wants to have her life in order. And she kind of feels like she's on this path. And I got to get personal here for a second, guys, here. Like, I struggle.
That's all right.
I struggle with my weight like you guys wouldn't believe. Okay. Like, I am a heavy guy and I have a really tough time controlling my appetite and eating, and I eat a lot of food. And, you know, I'll go like a couple weeks where I think this is it. This is the time when I'm going to finally get it in order. Mm-hmm. And then I take a tumble and then I overeat over a weekend or something like this. And like, I've been that person where I'm like, no, I'm better now. I'm doing okay. And you feel it. You think that you're that in that moment, but you're not there yet. You know?
Yeah.
So that's how I see that scene. You know, as a person with his own problem, as a person whose family is just loaded with drinking and alcohol problems, you know, and it's not that she wants to be lying. She's not lying out of malice. She's lying to herself that she thinks she's over this drug addiction and cleaning up her life. And it's wonderful. I love it. I think it's a wonderful layer to this character.
That makes sense. So appreciate you sharing something personal.
Thanks.
But yeah, like I was connecting with it on a completely different level because I might as well get personal too. So, and I've probably talked about it a little bit on Earl Grey, but, I have had a really difficult relationship with my parents. I haven't talked to my dad in some years or my mom in even longer because, you know, because certain things happen or certain things are said where you unfortunately, and I don't feel good about this, but you unfortunately feel like it's better not to have that person in your life than to have them in your life. Mm-hmm. And so I was feeling very much what Gabe was feeling in that scene. Like all of these things have happened and now you're coming and you think everything's going to be fine in this moment just because you want to be here for this or that. So I was feeling that, but at the same time, I was feeling for Raffi and what she was going through. And I was kind of like feeling that side of it more than I usually do in these things. So I thought it was just so well done in that scene. I mean, we talked about favorite moments and I had a favorite moment with Seven and Picard, but that was definitely my favorite scene because it just kind of connected with me the most. And it was just so wonderfully written and felt very real.
Yeah.
That felt like a real conversation and confrontation.
Oh yes.
That would happen that way. Mm-hmm. So, and like even to the point where, you know, he's talking with Raffi, it's tense, he's getting angry. Like his wife comes in and he just kind of like is going to change things up a little bit and be like, "Oh, hi, you know, meet my mom. She's just passing through. Everything's fine." Yeah. And like, I think we've all been in those situations where there's a confrontation or something going on and someone else comes in the room or something and you have to like play a different role or act differently. So that felt so real. So, I think there's a lot of things that are written really well in this episode, but I think that's shown through, especially for Kirsten Byers writing for this. So, yeah, I mean, that was great. And it's those kinds, because there was a lot of heavy stuff in this episode, right? But it's those kinds of scenes that connect you back, I think, a little bit to like the real kind of personal interactions that are happening as well. So,
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Michelle Hurd is just so amazing. So amazing.
Yeah. And you know, she really is. And I've been thinking about it, like, you know, who's my favorite character on this show, and I think it might be Raffi. I think I might agree with you. I think we need to see more of the show for me to say for sure, but I think that the actress is doing a great job and like conveying like this real place that this person is going to and this real thing that she's trying to transform and she's struggling with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to say about Raffi and her son?
No.
I don't have anything personal to share.
No.
Oh, that's all right. It's okay.
Yeah, thank you for sharing too, Justin. Yes. So.
Yes, thank you both.
No problem.
I guess the one thing is that, like, we all know that we're going to get this conspiracy solved by the end of the season, right? We're going to get an answer. I have my theories as to.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But I'm still not sure because they always want something to lead into the next season. But I don't know. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about one other thing that happens toward the very end of the episode. We've talked about Jurati and Maddox a little bit. They had, a romantic relationship before. And toward the end of the episode, basically, I think Picard's coming in to check on Maddox, and Jurati's like, oh, he just needs some rest. Oh, by the way, I think one thing that helps to know from the book is Jurati was a medical doctor before she got her doctorate in robotics. Yep. So like, there's a reason she's doing all this medical stuff, yep. But anyway, and Picard kind of goes away and then, you see Jurati and rewatching it, that she's kind of struggled with this decision mm-hmm. throughout. She's basically going to kind of terminate the treatment that's healing his injuries and kill him. And like, I think when I first saw this, like, I think I was kind of shocked. Like I knew that like there was something going on with Jurati or whatever. We talked about the influence of O before and whatever, mm-hmm. but I had no idea that was going to happen at the time. Maybe I just don't pick up on the cues, but I was just like, I can't believe this is happening. But like, what did you guys think about this scene? I'll start with you, Chrissy.
I kind of knew it was coming because when I looked up the actor, as I was watching it at the beginning, I ended up on Memory Alpha, and it says deceased.
Don't do that.
Why don't you do that? That'll give you spoilers.
I didn't think about it. I was just looking for the actor.
You've watched the whole episode, don't go to Memory Alpha.
Right, I know.
You know, I did that.
I'm not as bothered by spoilers as a lot of people.
Oh, I hate this stuff. I did that for the second episode of season 4 of Game of Thrones. Yeah. I went to look up something completely random. I hadn't seen the first mm-hmm. two episodes yeah. of the season yet. I go to their Wikipedia. Bright front and center yeah. is a dead picture of Joffrey. And I'm like, for crying out loud.
Like, more spoilers.
Yeah, so
yeah,
no, people don't go there. Anyway, that's like, yeah. So you already knew.
I knew he was going to be dead by the end of, if not the episode, then the end of the season. So,
well, you knew it would be the end of the episode because on Memory Alpha, they wouldn't have the end of the season. So.
All right. Well, anyway.
Keep going.
I brought it up. So I didn't catch it on the first watch, but the second watch, I started to think that maybe the reason she was acting so twitchy and nervous mm-hmm. the whole time
yep.
was that this was something she intended to do from the get-go.
Yep.
And then my question yes. is, okay, first of all, then she goes, there's the thing about, I wish you knew what I know, and I wish yep. I yep. didn't know what I know, or I don't mm-hmm. have the line exactly written yeah, down. But that, what does she know? How did she come to find out it? How did she come to find it out? Why is it so drastic? Yeah.
Yeah, I had some thoughts about that, but I want to hear what you have to say first, Brandon.
Oh.
Well, first of all, we're like not seeing Memory Alpha beforehand. Yeah. Were you surprised that this happened?
I was, yes. Especially after seeing the video calling back to their relationship mm-hmm. and having that tie back to the yeah. book. I was very surprised by that because I told you, a couple episodes ago when she met up with O, you predicted, and I did too, that like she was going to be an agent for O. And I'm like, stop talking about that because I don't want to hear it because I like Agnes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think she's a great character, but it is a very, very logical prediction to make. And I think that's who definitely showed her something, talked to her about something. And yes, this episode was very well written because upon a first viewing, you think yeah. she's simply uncomfortable being the fact that she's got to be operating the transporter.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. On the first viewing. But upon multiple viewings, you're like, no, because when the EMH shows up the first time, he's like, what is your psychological distress or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And please state the nature of your psychological emergency.
Yeah. And he says that the second time when she's killing him. And that's yeah. good writing. If you can write something mm-hmm. and it means one thing on your first viewing and then yeah. having that extra information completely reinterprets it, you've done your job right.
Yeah.
And I was picking up other things on multiple viewings. Like the first viewing when she was watching the home movie and she shut it off and was crying, I was like, oh, she's thinking back to those times and how it didn't work out and mm-hmm. she may never see him again. But then on the second viewing, it's like she's crying because she thinks she's going to kill him.
Yeah.
So, oh, goodness. Yeah. I was seeing like all the looks she was giving and all of that. So I think that worked really well. But like the way that, okay, so after seeing this, the way that I interpreted it was that, because I think some people were saying like she was brainwashed or something like that, but it
doesn't seem to be that way.
It doesn't seem to be that. It seems to be, showed her something that was just like so terrible. I mean, it must, they've talked about the destroyer and destroying all life and whatever. It must have been that was like, some things need to happen. Otherwise, like lots and lots of people are going to die, like that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. she was just like, I have to do this, but I don't want to do this. And it was just, it was really heartbreaking to, mm-hmm.
yeah.
to watch that. And for them to end the episode on that, I was like, no.
What I liked and what made me like it and appreciate it to the point that I could is her saying those mm-hmm. things. I wish you could
she's really regretting it.
What I knew. And I wish I didn't know what I knew. I wish they didn't show me. You know, like that's a good line.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah, and I was thinking like, I wish you knew what I know. Yeah. Almost like if you knew what I know, you would understand, but you can't because mm-hmm. I have to do this thing. I mean, of course, this gets to the, maybe this will get into predictions or whatever, but like this gets to the point, like she does this thing and like, what's going to happen? Is she going to cover up the evidence, say he was too far gone and or whatever, and like keep going or get found out? I don't know. But
well, the hologram saw.
Yeah. But you can mess with matrices. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, it was one of those things where I was like, it was one of the things on the first viewing that it ended with that. And I was like, I just don't know what to think about this episode right now. Yeah. So, but anyway, I think we've talked about like a bunch of different episode specific things. Anything else we need to say about Jurati and Maddox or other episode specific type stuff?
I think that Maddox is only aware of two androids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it. It seems to be only two now.
And so now we have to find out why the Romulans think there's a nest. Okay.
Yeah, or if there's someone else that is making them. Mm-hmm.
So that leads me to, it's not really a prediction, but I think the Girardi we're seeing is not the original Girardi. I think that's an android along the lines of Juliana Tainer.
Thinking about that, how can you be sure the Maddox isn't like a flesh and blood android?
Well, I guess you can say that about anybody at this point. But
the whole crew. But
It out there, it's a possibility.
I still think Rios is a hologram. Possible.
I can see where that might be. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say no to that immediately.
It is still a possibility. It's still in play.
Could have some type of built-in emitter.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. Like he has a mobile emitter like integrated within himself if he's a hologram, but we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So we've talked about episode specific topics. I put something in here, I think at the request of listeners.
Before we go there, there's still a couple little things that we have to talk about with Maddox. Some information that we got important.
Go ahead.
Okay, so the first thing is that this MUM is an AI program.
Yeah, embedded AI mom.
It's an embedded AI mom. And so my impression on hearing that is like, so she's only been around a little while. She's got these two androids have these fake memories implanted in them because they're only a couple years old. This might be the first time that they've called this program. So they might have these fake memories. And so they get to a point where it's so tragic. Yeah. Something so bad is happening that they call their mom, which triggers which triggers them to like, you know,
but I think he was also implying that it's this embedded mom AI that can activate them.
Yeah.
Like when you see Dodge activate, I think it's that embedded AI that's doing the activation.
But she was already activated because the Romulans activated her when they attacked her. Right.
Well, they were doing some things and then they were like, oh, no, she's activated.
Right.
And it made me think like this embedded AI saw that she was in grave danger and activated her to saver or whatever. But yeah, that was an interesting line.
So we know that it wasn't a real mom. I thought that it might be a Romulan thing, but it turns out that it's like a safety program or whatever, like a safety switch. But also, Maddox tells Picard that Soji's on the on the artifact, and Dodge was on Earth to find out about the ban. So so Maddox sent Soji to the artifact. He sent her there.
Right. Which is an interesting choice because, like, and I think he, you know, Picard gets out of him, like, it seems like it involves the Romulans and the Federation. So if it involved the Federation, going to Earth would make sense. I guess if it involves the Romulans, going to the artifact would make sense. But, like, why there specifically? Like, why is that the epicenter of things? Does it have something to do with this Shaenor assimilation or something that, he was like, I need to go there for the information? Don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was really interesting that it was him sending them there specifically.
That's all that I got for
I mean there was a lot of really interesting information in a couple lines.
I can't wait till we have the whole thing and then we can go back and go, oh, that was that.
Yeah, and then have the episode, let's talk about the whole season. We've put in a new segment here at the request of some listeners, some of your fans, Chrissy, would like Chrissy's history lesson.
Chrissy's history corner.
Or corner. Hey, maybe that works.
That works too.
So what have you got for us this week?
All right. So I already talked about the parallels with Chernobyl and the collapse of Rome and the collapse of the USSR, but that was off the top of my head. The thing that I think might hold a little clue for what we're dealing with. I actually didn't catch watching it. Justin, you caught it. And as soon as you mentioned it, I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. We start in the Hypatia system. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Hypatia is was a Platonic philosopher and mathematician who lived in Alexandria in the 4th century CE. So the Common Era. Okay. Formerly known as AD. She is the first female mathematician and serious female philosopher that we have a decent amount of writing for. And even, I don't think we have any of her writing, but I think we have references to her writing in other authors. So she was a very influential figure in Alexandria at the time. She was not Christian in a city that was primarily Christian at that point. We're talking, I think she dies around, I think, right before the turn of the century. I don't remember exactly the year. So she's pagan, or I should say she's not Christian. Okay. So she's probably keeping the Greek gods, maybe some of the Roman religion prior to Christianity. Or she's in Alexandria, she might be keeping the Egyptian gods. But because she was such a good philosopher and mathematician, she was generally well loved by everybody in the community. They weren't disturbed by her religious nature. Okay. There was the prefect of Alexandria was a Roman named Orestes, and he got into an argument with the bishop of Alexandria named Cyril, and he ended up closing some of the churches, and Cyril had other issues with him because, again, he was not Christian either. She was acting as a go-between at some point, or she was friendlier with Orestes more than she was with Cyril.
A go-between, so an ancient facer?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even go there. Okay.
Sorry, continue.
No, that's great. So, all right. So, because she appeared to take the side of the Roman prefect, one of the Christians in Cyril's congregation took it upon himself to get a mob together to kill her. And so she was beaten to death and is considered to be a martyr to science and philosophy.
Wow.
So how does that connect with this? I'm not sure yet, except for the fact that we have certainly a tragic situation with Seven. And
well, this is taking place in the Hypatia system, and this is where you see Icheb get killed. He's a science officer. He's a bit of a maybe martyr for for science, or you know the correct use of science and inquiry and all of that instead of a distortion of it. Maybe that's reaching, but
no, that makes sense. I was too focused on the gender thing, because a lot of times Hypatia's brought up as like, look, this is a time where we don't think women were doing things and learning things, and here she was. So
but with like all the allusions that they've made to mythology and history, it felt intentional when I saw it and looked it up. But
The other thing I was going to say, we have the names of the next few episodes, and one of them is a Greek word, nepenthe. And that, I looked it up.
Rurapente?
That was the first thing I thought, right?
Rurapente.
I looked it up, and nepenthe, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but this is a drug that Homer talks about in the Odyssey. And it has the power to remove sorrowful memories. So I think we're going to get some connection there, too. But that's in a couple of weeks.
That's in 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, I think next week is the Impossible Box.
Impossible Box.
Giggity.
So, giggity. Indeed.
Then Nepenthe and then Broken Pieces. Interesting.
Broken Pieces seems pretty straightforward, considering the opening sequence. So
it's just a giant pyramid of Borg parts for the whole episode. Yeah. That was really interesting, Chrissy. Like, it was one thing that like flashed by on the screen and I was like, does this mean anything? So I appreciate you going deep into that and doing all the research and all that.
I'm sure that these are intentional references, and we're going to get some more clarity on these things and to how they play out, because Discovery season one focused really hardcore on that book, Mycelium Running. Right? Yep. Talking about the spore drive and the...
And Alice in Wonderland.
And Alice in Wonderland quite a bit too, yes. So I think that we're going to definitely have a little bit more explanation as to what these Greek myths mean once we get to the end of it. So
Very cool.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's going to be good.
Thank you, Chrissy, for inaugurating that segment.
Chrissy's History Corner.
So at this point, let's talk about some canon and books connections. So, Brandon, what do you got?
Oh, my favorite one. Again, so I just pick out my favorite one, right? So, my favorite one was the double reference to Quark, right? So, Quark's my favorite character on Deep Space Nine. Every time I do a DS9 rewatch, I love the Ferengi episodes more and more. And so, to have them just name drop Quark, I'm like, yes!
Yep.
So,
Mr. Quark of Ferenginar.
Yeah.
And then, I'm not doing the voice right, but yeah. And then Quark's bar, you see. Yeah.
So, is it a franchise, or is he actually on Freakout now?
I think we need to see him. Armin Shimmerman, come on down.
Yeah, really.
Quark's a great character. He really is.
He is wonderful.
Yeah.
Didn't he end up the... Wait a second. Was it in the books that he ended up the ambassador, or was that at the end of the show?
That was in the books.
At the end?
It was only
at
the books.
End of the show, I think he was still at the...
He was still at the bar. Right, because it was going to be the last bastion of Ferenginess once his brother took over.
Oh, so. No, he was something at like the that. End of the... Oh. He was ambassador at the final episode. His brother made him it. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Because
right.
it was...
So
the,
maybe
they were,
that's...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right.
So then maybe every Ferengi embassy is a Quark's bar.
That would be hilarious.
Franchise.
He's bought the franchise for the...
Yep.
The embassies, yeah. No, that's a cool one. I love that, and that we're getting some DS9 references is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure. So, Chrissy... Any favorite canon or books connections before I trot out my laundry list?
Of course. Aside from what we already talked about, they're drinking Tranya.
Tranya. A Corbinite maneuver.
It was the wrong color. I roll my eyes every time they say Tranya. I don't know.
It feels like a word that you would roll your eyes to. Yes. One would roll one's eyes to.
Because it looks like Tranya. Tang. The original stuff looks like Tang. So
I'm sure that's what it was.
Different colors and flavor. Yeah.
Apparently it hides poison well, so that's good.
I guess so.
And then the three swipe thingies on the transporter, which they have maintained through every iteration.
Right. You mean where they're like kind of pushing the virtual dials up? Yeah, that was
dials. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of what the word was. I'm like, it's swipe thingy.
Yeah.
But yeah. But that's been maintained. There was a big deal about that on Next Gen when they did it. So. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to see.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Okay, so my list. So related to the Quark's bar one, I don't know if you noticed, Brandon or Chrissy, but there was like a little slogan for Quark's bar.
Yes.
It was kind of tiny in the background. What is yours is ours. And Jim Morehouse, who was doing the Trek Core review, pointed out that it seems to be a play on the 42nd rule of acquisition. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was like a nice little... I love the little things they're putting in the Skylines.
Oh, yeah.
So that was one thing. When Vup is talking about Quark, he was talking about Rios handling some dealings with the Breen. So it was nice mm-hmm. to get a Breen reference there. Let's see what else we have here. I think in the little Skyline also, there was something advertising Dabo. So that was nice.
Dabo,
yeah. I think you mentioned it before, Chrissy, but you see Mr. Mott's hair emporium. Yes. So nice that the Bolian Mr. Mott that you see in a couple of TNG episodes is still around and doing hair, apparently.
I don't know if you'll mention it, but what about the red Bolian construction thing?
That was fun.
Yeah, the red Bolian. And it was cool to get a reference to a Bolian, but I was like, what does that mean? How is it different from the blue Bolians we're used to? That was an interesting thing. Okay, so here's an interesting reference. I had to look it up to be sure it was something.
Mm-hmm.
But Rios orders a drink called the Temptibi Lagoon. Does this sound familiar to you guys?
No.
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 Not at all.
Okay, so it is a body of water on Ryza that is referenced in the DS9 episode, Let He Who Is Without Sin.
Oh, that's why I don't remember it.
Deep cut.
For the most part, it's a terrible episode.
Yeah,
but
it is.
Yeah.
Dax like, in a bathing suit, so it's not all bad.
Well, and you get the story of Worf and his childhood yes. and, yep. you know, oh, yeah, killing the person right. at soccer, which actually adds something to the character. But yeah. So anyway, that was a super deep cut reference that they did with that drink. Of course, there were mentions of the Delta Quadrant and Voyager, mm-hmm. which is cool. And I think, and toward the end, Maddox mentioned Soong. I don't know if we've
yes.
talked about Soong by name, but And there was one other thing. It's not a connection, but something I forgot to talk about. When Rios is talking about the artifact, he's saying it's in Romulan space. I don't know if we knew before that or if we knew that there was still such a thing as Romulan space. So I thought that was interesting. We'll see where it is. But anyway, there were a bunch of different interesting references in this episode, and I appreciate it. Cause I don't think so far they've had a reference where I've been like, why did they do that? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of them have been subtle or interesting that way.
The I don't know. I thought it was kind of shocking. Did you guys catch that the guy that died at the beginning was Icheb?
Oh my god! Yeah. Well, there's a connection. Yeah,
that was the first thing in episodes.
Yeah, Icheb's a connection. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. So let's keep going here because it seems like this is going to be a long episode anyway.
Yep.
We're hitting our normal mark. It's fine.
Yeah. Hitting the mark, yeah. All right, so predictions for the next episode or upcoming episodes. Brandon, what have you got?
I'm still thinking that that
she, Rios is a hologram?
Rios is a hologram, yeah. I'm still thinking that. I don't know if we're done with 7 of 9, right? So
I don't think we are, at least if IMDb is to be believed.
Yes.
Oh, also, wait, there's another source, which is at Star Trek Las Vegas last year. She said the episodes with Jonathan Frakes were her first two episodes. That tells me she's in at least one more.
Okay. Because she
I think she will be back.
If that thing was the transport for thingamajig that she stole.
Enhancer, yeah.
Then did she automatically transport up after the fact? You know, after she blew those people away? Because the last we saw her, she was...
Oh, Seven, you're back.
Yeah, the last thing we saw of her. But then she did also give Picard her business chip, right? Her business card chip?
Yeah, if you ever need a vigilante.
Yeah, so I don't know if we're going to see her
again. I have a feeling we'll see her again, but she'll come by on a different ship for some reason. Yeah. I mean, like... You know, when they brought her on the show, I was thinking, like, and when we saw the Borg artifact, I was like, oh, it's going to relate to that and the ex-Borgs and all of that. So I think she'll meet up with that storyline at some point. But I think we will see more of her.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm having a tough time with predictions right now. So I had my wild ones.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think
it's not totally predictable.
Yeah. I did have a question, though. Can I read the track titles yet?
The answer to that is yes. Okay. So listeners, for the soundtrack, which I had gotten and had a few things spoiled, including that Maddox would be in the episode. So I knew that before this episode. So yes, I did confirm based on the track titles and listening to it that it only goes up to episode 5. Okay. So go out there. You don't have to worry about being spoiled if you've seen up to episode 5.
There's nothing about Qui-Gon's funeral or anything like that?
No. Nope. I mean, basically, I think the last track is the one that's playing in the last scene with Jurati and Maddox, mm-hmm. I think. So,
okay,
yeah. Yep, you can safely look at that if you want.
Okay, good.
See,
yeah, because I've been staying away from it. I listened to a couple tracks, but I wasn't looking at them, and I didn't go too far into it. So yeah, that reference was a Star Wars Episode One reference, where on the soundtrack that came out like a week before the movie did, one of the track titles is called like Qui-Gon's Funeral, and it's like, oh,
yep.
Spoiler.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can safely go there, and it's a really good soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some great music. All right, so Chrissy, predictions?
I already mentioned my Dr. Girardi prediction. The other thing, I think we're going to see Locutus again in some context.
As some kind of flashback?
Yeah, as a flashback or in discussion, and he's going to be thinking about it.
I would tend to think they might shy away from that because we already kind of had a Locutus flashback in First Contact, mm-hmm. but
okay. So I wonder if that means it'll be like a flashback, if your prediction would be that it would be a flashback before the episode started then, right?
Maybe.
So I have a couple of predictions. So I think the first thing is we haven't seen any Federation. Well, that's not exactly true. In Picard's dream sequence, we did see the Enterprise D. But outside of dream sequences, we haven't seen any Federation starships. And I think we will. I think it would be I really don't know if they'll go there, but I think it would be an interesting choice because I think we know we'll see Riker and Troi next week to have some kind of flashback to the Titan in some way. Mm-hmm. So anyway, maybe it's a pipe dream, but I think that would be a cool thing to see.
I like that idea.
Related to Federation starships, this could mean absolutely nothing, but at some period of time after the announcement by Patrick Stewart that Star Trek Picard would be coming, there was a tweet from someone, and I have to remember who it was, but I think it was somebody that was maybe involved in the show at the time that was like tweeting at Nicole DeBoer, who played Ezri Dax on Deep Space Nine, like, the keys are here for you for the Aventine or something like that. And I was just like, that would kind of be cool. I'd love to see Captain Dax on the Aventine. I don't know if we'll see that, but I have a feeling like, okay, maybe more general prediction that might be closer to the mark is that, you know, they're going to the Borg artifact. These two things that have been separate are going to kind of crash into each other at some point, right? I mean, either it's going to fully happen next week, or, you know, they'll tease it next week and it'll fully happen in episode 7. But what's going to happen after that, right? And it feels like there's going to be like a wider, a more far-ranging plot that might encompass more places or more parts than we've seen so far in the last couple of episodes, would be my general prediction. So we'll see.
Cool.
They could all be wrong.
They could be.
Yeah. Okay, so that's for predictions and questions and concerns. Mm. So, Brandon,
okay,
you
so
may have saved a few.
My main questions are: why does Bejeweled want the Borg parts?
To sell them.
Yep.
Just to sell them.
Just to sell them to get money. That is my impression.
Okay. What is the Conclave of Eight? And then, why exactly did Agnes kill Maddox? You know, like those are the main questions mm-hmm. that I have now. As for like concerns, so this part is what I originally intended. So generally we'll bring up things that we have when we're talking about the episode, but I had a couple issues with this episode with some of the things here. And so the first one I'll start with is I didn't really like the comedic element that they took Tilly on in Star Trek Discovery. And I said that like right near the end of season one, I'm like, I don't like this and I hope this doesn't continue. And it did.
I know, because you were talking with me about it at the time.
Yeah, I'm like, everybody was telling me I was nuts. They're like, how can you determine this from one episode? And I'm like, I don't want this to continue, and it sure as heck did. And there was a lot of people who didn't like it. But yeah, the comedic elements for Eleanor, I'm worried about that, because a dry character like this being played for comedic element in this episode, his first episode after his introduction, I got kind of like, was rolling my eyes at some of the lines where, oh, you guys are pretending. And like, I don't know, like just, I hope they don't go that route with him. So
I had a similar concern because it felt like he had a really great episode last week and to really introduce you to who he is and all of that. And then this week he was more for comic relief where they weren't sure what to do with him.
Yeah.
So I had that same concern. I think it's probably temporary for this week.
I hope
they weren't sure what to slot him in.
I don't mind humor. Like when Agnes was like, cringing against the robots. And then when she walked up to Rios and was like, like went to pretend to punch him. I'm like, that's really cute. And I like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't mind humor. I'm just like, this is our first introduction to Elnor after his introduction. And he took a back seat to this episode and he was silly. And, you know, they all like rolled their eyes at him when he tried to make a Rios accent and they're all like, how about you just don't talk? And I'm like, what?
I would have laughed if I was there. I'd be like, oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, I don't know. So I was a little bit upset with that.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then Picard's French accent, give me a break.
Yes.
And I have to acknowledge in the subtitle it says cartoonish French accent. Yeah. I thought it was hilarious actually, but
it was intended to be bad.
I couldn't place it, okay? But I know that there's like some, you know, comedy sci-fi thing where they're like, some random guy goes up to somebody, they're talking to them, and he starts using a fake accent, and the guy turns to him and he's like, why are you using a fake accent? This person doesn't know who you are. Like, they're not going to recognize your voice, right? This is some random bouncer at some planet on the other end of the galaxy is not going to recognize that this is Jean-Luc Picard. Okay, so, like, I don't know. I just – that really irked me and was a little bit over the top for me. Then also, one thing that just I thought was kind of silly as well was this emotion inhibitor that they stuck Rios with. Right, where they're like, oh, don't worry, it'll kick in. So they've stuck him with this thing that gives him some kind of a high. He clearly had a physical response.
Not actually. He had a physical response, but I looked it up and it's kind of a combination of things that are meant to calm the heart, calm anxiety, and a tranquilizer was in it as well. Okay. And I think that's why his eyes are kind of like.
And they gave it to nobody else. Right. So Picard's down in front of him, lying his teeth off. Right. Everybody else is down there, lying their teeth off. They only gave it to the one person. He had a physical response when it kicked in. Right. So I don't know. I just had a little bit of it. Like, why did they do that? And why did they not give it to everybody? So
I can see that.
I don't think they were expecting everybody to run into that guy because they were barely expecting Rios to. Mm-hmm. They didn't know that that was who he was going to be meeting.
Mm hmm.
So,
and then
maybe they all got it and we didn't see it.
Yeah. Then the only other thing is with this Beta and Ari, like with the sense of smell thing, like Vulcans could barely function with humans with their sense of smell. If you got an alien with this much smell, like they're not going to be able to function, you know, like that's like, I don't know. Just those are my little problems that I had with the episode. Like I said, I liked the episode. I didn't hate it. It was fun. It's my least favorite so far. But I mean, something's got to be on the bottom of the list, right? So, but I still liked it a lot. So,
okay,
that's what I got.
All right, coming through with a long list.
I've been pretty quiet the last couple of episodes, so I'm okay with having a few here.
Okay, Chrissy, questions, concerns?
I brought up my questions already. I didn't really have any concerns. At least, no questions or concerns that haven't already been brought up. So.
Okay. I just had a couple of questions. Like, we're seeing Riker and Troi next week. Like, how do they fit into the episode if we're going to the artifact? So that's my question. But it'd be interesting to see. Where do they live? Earth, Beta Z, somewhere else? They happen to come by on a transport ship and they're in assault. Anyway.
Well, we saw them in that cabin,
anyway,
right?
So that's a question I have. How they? Yeah, in some cabin.
I thought originally that they were in the Nexus, right?
So, everyone did.
Yeah. That would be great.
That's how we get Guinan back next season.
Yes!
Yeah, from that echo. So I also have a question how, like, when they get to the artifact, how Hugh will fit into things. I think we will see him again. And I also brought up my question, like, does Jurati cover up what she did to Maddox or will she get caught or whatever? So mostly just questions of, like, where we're going. But, like, if I look ahead, I can kind of see where they're going, but I don't know how it's going to end, which I think is good. Okay, so now that we've talked about all of those things, final thoughts or other thoughts, Chrissy? Well, we didn't even give our initial thoughts. Let's acknowledge listeners. We forgot to give our initial thoughts, but maybe you know how we feel about it. But Chrissy, initial slash final thoughts.
Well, after this, I'm kind of tapped out. I don't know that I have anything else to say on it.
How are you?
Yeah, me too. I'm spent.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, you said you liked it a lot. Did you enjoy it, Chrissy?
I did. I think I might have enjoyed it more than Brandon did.
Yeah, I think it's a good episode. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So, this was... Okay, so as, a general thought on this episode, this was pretty interesting because... I don't know if it's because I was seeing it so early in the morning or because there was a lot of dark stuff, but this was the first one where I watched it. And at the end I was like, I'm not so sure about some of the decisions they made. I'm not sure if I like this. It's darker than I thought it would be. Cause I think I saw the preview and I thought, oh, they're dressing up and having a good time. And it was significantly different from that. So that was on the first viewing. Then I watched it a second time, a couple hours later, and things fell into place more for what was going on. I could see what they were going for. I could understand the decisions that they were making. And I came to, I think, really love the episode. So it does probably maybe rank a little bit lower among the other ones. But I felt in some ways the kind of dark turns that it took, with what the graphic stuff that was happening to Icheb and Girardi killing Maddox and, Seven killing somebody who's unarmed, who granted has done a lot of terrible stuff, felt like it might have been some of the darkest stuff since In the Pale Moonlight, which is an episode that I love and I think is probably the best episode in Star Trek. But on the first viewing, it took me some time to digest it and see if I really liked it or if the show had lost me. But then on rewatching it, now I've seen it three times, I think what they're doing was actually really great. And I know that changes in tone didn't work for you, Brandon, but that worked for me really well. And if they didn't have some of those changes in tone, it might have been a little harder to take, especially on rewatches. So anyway, that's all my thoughts. Well, it's been so much fun talking about the Picard episode Stardust City Rag, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, to the journey!
If I were writing Voyager right now, reconceiving it, I would make each season a different decade, show the progression of time over 70 years.
See, we could have just done that with Kes as a character, though. I know I said it probably a million times in the last five episodes, Kes could have shown us what that would have been within the seven-year period. So, we all know my opinions on Kes and how much I liked the character.
Earl Grey.
Okay, Amy, your ice pick.
What is that number?
Amy to the nth power pick.
I imagine it at the square root of minus one.
Negative one, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, one.
Literary Treks.
There's all this backstory as you're starting to learn in the show about what happened between Nemesis and the Picard show. And so there was all this backstory. You couldn't really show it all in the show. You don't want to. The show's about what's going on in the present time of the show. But, Star Trek, since its origin, has always had ancillary materials that flesh out these stories. So, and we knew that would be the case here.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
99% of the time, Star Trek tech makes sense. This does not to me.
Okay, Chrissy, Star Trek has asked me to believe some pretty ludicrous things. This takes the cake.
Okay. I think so. All right, this we're on takes the same the page. Cake.
This is completely...
More than going warp 10 turns you into lizard?
More than lizard babies.
Really?
More than Spot turning into a baby lizard. This, I'm just like, what are you trying to feed me here?
That's interesting, because I believe this a lot more than those other things.
But. Yeah. Brandon Baga's evolution theories are much more believable than this.
No, they're really not. But yeah.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the shows. And buy now low-quality vacations, low-dollar amount vacations. Let's go to Ryza, one-star resorts. Let's have fun. Click here now.
Go to Quarks.
Don't walk, run.
Don't walk, run.
Don't walk, run.
We've got iTunes rating. Can I read it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Can I read, please read both it. Of them?
Ooh.
We got a second one. Yes.
Oh, we have awesome. Two? Oh,
so I the did, first one I'll read is not... We got this before the last episode dropped, so this is not a response to our one-star one. But five-star review says, best podcast. I love this podcast, and I really look forward to it coming out each week. I don't really have any hardcore Trek fans in my life, so this is my only outlet. I like hearing what all three podcasters' ideas about Picard. I especially love my fellow Michigander, Chrissy's dry wit. Thank you for publishing this Yay. Every week and doing such a great and thoughtful job. And that is from Spiffy T. Thank you so much, Spiffy T. So, Michigander, yes, is that like you. A bird?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Hens?
Sure.
Is that the official term for someone from Michigan?
Well, it's kind of...
Cool.
It brings to mind a goose, but that's what it is.
Hens love roosters.
It's good for the goose, it's good for the Michigander. Hens
love roosters, geese love ganders, everyone else loves Michiganders.
Sure.
And Ned Flanders, yeah.
And then we got one more. This one came out just the other day. Insightful and entertaining, 5 stars. This podcast follows a familiar format shared by other shows on the network, Trek FM. It dives into the details of the show and how it relates to the franchise. The podcast asks questions of the Picard show and discusses it in a way that is both playful and entertaining. You don't have to be a full-on nerd to enjoy the conversation, but it is more enlightening if you are. The hosts inject humor that breaks the fourth wall by bringing in outside references such as Spaceballs to remind us not to take everything inside our mythos too seriously. In the end, it's the story that counts. In a way, this is like having a conversation at the school lunch table about what we love, and everyone is invited to pull up the third chair and listen in. The hosts will read comments of the viewers and address concerns and questions. It may be more interesting if the main line brings on guests or invites cast or crew to further the discussion. Keep up the great work and live long and prosper. And that is from _crash_. So thank you so much. Crash, if you haven't gone back, yes, we are planning on trying to get some more of the crew onto the show. If you go back, it was episode, 4 that we had Hanalei Culpepper on?
4.
She was the director of the first 3 episodes. Yeah. So we had a great interview with her. And I know that we're not going to say who, but we're trying to work on one. Justin's had a few messages back and forth with somebody.
Yep. Well, and I'm planning on doing some reaching out so that after the end of the season we can have more interviews. We'd love to. So, yeah, I can't promise anything specific right now, but definitely we would love to interview people involved in the show.
Who is this I have on the telephone right now? Patrick Stewart. Hi there, Patrick. hello there.
Well, you know Patrick Stewart.
Oh, I didn't know you were French, Patrick. Oui, oui.
Oh, wow. But, you know, Patrick Stewart's already been on the podcast because Duncan Barrett got an interview with him. So,
that's true.
There you go. So, yeah, but thank you so much for the great review. Really glad that...
yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
For you.
Yeah.
I love the school lunch table analogy. That's great.
Yes, and for more welcome, come to the Babel Conference and join in the discussion feed when the episodes drop. So Justin's a bit better at interacting than I am. You know, I try and get in there every once in a while, but I'm not as good as Justin is. Justin's very, very interactive on the Babel Conference.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So, if you are not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Be sure to check out our Picard coverage throughout the week. Commentary will be available as tracks on the line, feedback will be discussed on postcards on the line, and you can catch the full analysis right here on the main show. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the line and the Trek FM master feed.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where Christopher D. Littlefield will collect your feedback for postcards on the line. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
And if you'd prefer to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the line. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not knocking the heads off of pop-up ads?
I could try to do the sound. I don't know if I'll be really good at it. But yeah, when I'm not trying to kill those terrible, invasive, holographic pop-up ads that I'm going to sue somebody about, you can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting Earl Grey. That's our dedicated Star Trek The Next Generation show with my friends Amy Nelson and Joe Keegan. We have a great time talking about The Next Generation every week. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Brandon, where can people contact you when you're not hiring the Red Bullion to do maintenance on your house?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network, as well as in our own independent feed on a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where my friends Chris and Tom and I cover Alfred Hitchcock films one at a time in chronological order. And you can also find me over on the United Federation of Podcast Network with a show called Franchise Fatigue, which is all about movies, sequels, and remakes. And I do that with Zach, who's the former co-host of Standard Orbit. So they just announced that they'll be having their last episode, episode 300, either today or tomorrow, depending on when this episode drops. So be sure to check that out.
And we're both on that, right?
Yes, I play General Kord. They did an audio drama for Star Trek V, and I'm General Kord. So who did you play?
I play Sulu.
Sulu. Oh, my.
I tried to do the voice. I don't know if it'll come out well, but it made me realize that Sulu does not have a lot of lines in Star Trek V.
Yes. Neither did Kord.
It took me like 2 minutes to record it. So anyway, that'll be fun for sure.
Excellent. And I think that's pretty much it where you can find me. I said Twitter and whatnot. Chrissy, where can people find you when you're not, you know, trying to like rip eyeballs out of Egypt?
Ooh, oh, don't do that. Oh, my God.
No, I would not do that.
My nightmare tonight.
Yeah. Right, so I'm definitely not doing that. You can find me on Twitter at The Goddess Livia. That's TheGoddessLivia. And you can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page my fellow historian partner and I run, History with the Zilagis. And that's spelled Szilagyis. And we post there about our historical research, including my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. The Facebook links to our Patreon. So after you have made your recurring Trek FM contribution, consider becoming one of our patrons as well. Our first goal is to get 10 patrons at the $5 a month level. So far we have 3, and we're going to have some patron-only special stuff coming up. Some like 5-minute histories and things like that. So
nice.
So that would be appreciated if you could find it in your pocketbook. Thank you. Okay, and if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, as I mentioned, you can go and become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It does require a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you so much for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line.
So join us next time for another episode of The Line, where we'll talk about the 6th Picard episode, The Impossible Box.
Giggity.
It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life.
We're both working on it, aren't we? Every damn day of my life.
A whorehouse, snake house, a cuppa house, boxing house, in the Alphadorda system, but Jays will keep the city clean. They call it Stardust, Stardust. They call it Stardust City Limits. Warp 5 was the speed limit. Borg not allowed in it. You're gonna gamble on a Fridays and play piano on a Sunday. They call it Stardust. Been a long time. Oh, Stardust. They call it Stardust City Limit.
Apologies to the listener that complained about singing.